Hello!
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 Welcome to Movie Banter Podcast, Episode 4.
Episode 4.
Which we have yet to have a tagline for. I was thinking about this last night, and I was trying to think of fours. We can't really do Star Wars again.
No, we can. We haven't done that yet.
Here we have. Attack of the Banter was Episode 2.
Oh, it was Episode 2, was it?
Yeah. That's Attack of the Clones.
I thought it was... Oh, was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, what did you think
when we recorded it, it was Movie Banter Part 2. In tribute to Hot Shots.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So have you labelled it Attack of
I
the
have.
Banter?
Oh, yes. Sorry.
That's all right. No worries.
I did think of a fourth.
So we can't have a New Hope.
No. Well, we could have a New Hope.
Movie Banter 4, Kingdom of the Crystal Banter.
That could work. No, the one that occurred to me was Movie Banter on Patrol.
Nice.
Which could work.
Nice. Banter on Patrol.
Touch of the Gutenberg. Can't fault him.
Exactly.
Except, of course, you can. He's been on TV recently.
Yeah,
I caught him in silence on a muted television, and I wasn't too sure what he was trying to promote.
Didn't someone say that he's in a play in this country?
Oh, really? It would make sense.
Or Panto,
I think it was on local news.
I think he's in Panto.
It makes sense. He's Panto Fair.
Can I have a look? I mean, I know it's very unprofessional to start.
No,
well, you witter on. You introduce yourself and us and who we
fair
are.
Fair enough.
Gutenberg's in Panto.
What a way to begin. Yes, my name is John Sands. I run the website moviemistakes.com, which is a haven for all film geeks and film non-geeks everywhere, listing mistakes in films.
How do you spell Gutenberg?
Gutenberg, I think. If I can do that I think I've proved my movie geekery if I've got that right from memory. And Paul Carenza is the one currently using the internet.
Hello!
who is a stand-up comic and writer, and also runs the movietimeline.com, which is also film geekery in a different way, listing dates from films. We, in a semi-unprofessional way, we probably should have checked this beforehand. But, yeah, for any American listeners who may not do Panto, because it's a fairly British thing.
Yeah.
It's a weird... It only ever comes on at Christmas. It's a play often with not very famous people in it, but slightly famous, kind of C-list celebrities. And it's classic tales like Sleeping Beauty or Peter Pan. Actually, not Sleeping Beauty. Peter Pan and Cinderella and similar. So classic fairy tales acted out in a very camp, slightly weird, cheesy way. Primarily targeted at kids, but done overboard. And describing it doesn't quite get it across. If you're American and you come to Britain, come and go and see a pantomime, and you'll be slightly confused.
Steve Guttenberg is in Bromley,
right,
as Baron Hardup.
Nice,
wonderful.
Boy, Dick Whittington.
Cinderella, isn't it?
Oh, Cinderella. I can't remember. They all blend into each other. They all involve.
Look, there he is.
He's there.
He looks just like him, but older and slightly chubbier. And that's bizarre.
Well, yes. Why is he suddenly coming out of the... Well, he's still been going, but... See, I listened to a radio phone-in the other day, and it was a late-night thing with just general witchering going on. And the DJ was holding essentially a tribute to Steve Guttenberg films.
Oh, why
and someone
you?
Phoned up, who's Steve Guttenberg?
No!
And the DJ pretty much reacted like that.
Did he send him to the Churchill Theatre in Bromley? Because that way you'll find out. I've played the Churchill Theatre in
Bromley.
Really? I've been on the same stage as the Guttenberg.
Wow.
I'm impressed.
See, this is what, for any young people listening, you may not know who Steve Guttenberg is. He was famous in the 80s for being in the Police Academy films and Cocoon. And I've run out.
If you're American and young, then you don't know what Panto is or Steve Guttenberg.
We've lost most of our audience.
In which case, welcome to the podcast.
To the podcast, which you won't follow.
It properly starts now, in that case, for you folks. That was...
But he was in the first four Police Academy films. Oh, and of course, Three Men and a Baby and Three Men and a Little Lady.
Which is coming back, isn't it? They're doing Three Men and a Bride. Three Men and a Bride,
yes.
That's right. Okay.
Which will involve them all dusting themselves off and putting on wigs,
yeah,
and a bit of makeup.
They can look like themselves in fat suits. Right? Is Ted Danson going to look like the character, the vicar he played?
That's
at the
a
end
very good
of the
point.
Last
yeah,
one,
when he made up and
where he looked
ancient.
Like an old bumbling Englishman. That was very funny.
Was it someone? One of our friends' sisters was an extra in Three Men and a Little Lady.
Is that right?
I think it was Tom. I think Rachel or Bridget.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Was she
an extra or in the background in the school?
Hang on, which wasn't in the background behind a curtain, being a bit
ghost-like. No,
no. Was she?
That's in the first one, and that's not a ghost. It's just a cardboard cutout.
It's Tom's sister.
Yes. Steve Guttenberg. How did you come to see Guttenberg and pantomime?
I've no idea. Because of the subtitle
yes, movie
of the show.
See,
yes.
So you've gone off on a tangent pretty much before.
See, they're all
started.
Coming over it because Henry Winkler has been here 3 years now doing Captain Hook.
Really?
Yeah.
Every year.
The Fonz, he was in Woking last year. I think he's in Birmingham this year. Although, because most people who do Panto do a different show each year.
Yes.
But, I mean, he's played the same character. He's just clearly learned a set of lines and is just
trotting it out.
That's all he knows now, yeah. You know.
I now feel I'm doing him a slight disservice because I said earlier that Panto often has C-list celebrities, except for the rare occasion, which now sounds like a backpedal, but it's actually true. The rare occasion when you get someone quite famous doing pantomime, and then it's a big thing.
It's come back. I think
Ian McKellen.
Well, that's because Stephen Fry wrote that one. It was for the Old Vic, wasn't it? But I think that's actually sort of almost reset Panto. I think it went through a bit of a doldrums probably up to about 5 years ago.
Right.
And then last few years, I think it's also because of the celebrity thing on TV suddenly TV is spawning more celebrities than ever with nothing to do with them. Whereas so you put them in a Panto, people will go and see the Big Brother winner the Hamilton Survivor celebrity or something like that. You know,
then that does bring it back to my first point of not very famous people.
Well, exactly.
The fact they've been on TV doesn't make them famous. Well, we've both been on TV, doesn't make us famous.
I'm waiting for the Panto call right now, in fact. But yes. So that aside, we're going to also be talking this week in Movie Banter 4, Banter on Patrol.
Yeah, I think that'll do.
We'll be talking about Changeling, the new Angelina Jolie, Clint Eastwood, heart-wrenching flick.
Angst-ridden.
So we've both seen that, so we shall be giving our thoughts on that. And also, what else I've seen this week, I've seen Waz, which sounds wrong. It's actually W Delta Z, so it's like a triangle. So people just say Waz, it looks like an A.
Right.
But it's actually...
Woods.
Well, isn't Delta G in the Greek alphabet? Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta... I think it's fourth,
Well, that is D then.
Doesn't it? Or is it D?
I don't know. The fourth letter in the English alphabet is D. But
they're different in... I can't remember. I think it might be D, actually. So it's Woods, yeah.
Right.
But it's about... It's a bit like a serial killer, a film, a bit like Seven, but not as good. I'll do that bit now, shall I? I'll do Waz now. Because, you know, I started, so I'll finish. It's pitched as a bit like Seven, and it is a bit like Seven. It's British, so therefore it's not quite as good as the American counterpart.
Cheaper Seven?
It still looks quite expensive, I suppose. It's okay. Melissa George and Stellan Skarsgård and a woman... Selma Blair, that's right, who it is. It's all right. I mean, it's two policemen going after a serial killer. And I'll be honest, though, when I first saw it, I had it on the background, I was working, and I just, you know, it finished, and I thought, that was rubbish. Nothing happened. And then I sort of...
Did you realise you hadn't actually watched
it? Well, then I checked on IMDb and thought, oh, that's what it was about. I didn't get that at all.
Right.
So I actually watched it again, paying entirely attention to it. And it's not bad, actually.
Okay, fair enough. So on a repeat viewing, when you're actually looking
at the lesson
screen,
there is actually watch a film. Don't do something else at the same time.
Although I often find that... Because I often have films on in the background when I'm working. And having... It's quite a good benchmark of a film. Because sometimes I put a film on... And I'll stop working and start watching the film. Think, wow, this is looking really good. And other times, it'll go completely past, and 2 hours will fly by, and I realise I haven't watched a single thing, and I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
And so, even if I've not really watched the film, I figure it can't have been that good, or it would have interested me more.
Well, true. But then, wow, it was all right the second time
enough.
Around.
Okay. It's not an exclusive rule.
It's not bad. I mean, the thing with you know, anyone claiming to be a bit like Seven means you know there's a twist coming, really.
Yes.
It was a twist on a serial killer flick that I hadn't really seen before, and it was quite interesting. And it just very gritty, though. And there comes a point, I'm there watching it thinking, to justify this amount of grit and gore, it's got to be pretty good, I think.
Right.
I don't think you'd excuse that much sort of just stuff you don't want to look at, really, unless there's a really good reason to watch the film. And I don't think there was a really good reason to watch it. It was a little formulaic along the way, but there were some good moments in it.
So style outweighed substance. But it wasn't all style and no substance.
The substance was good. The only trouble I was having with the style is it was... I mean, Seven, I thought, was great because it looked gritty throughout and it was this rainy city and it was constantly raining and it was constantly gritty and, you know, you could tell even the cameras had these filters to make it look gritty.
Yes, just generally gritty.
This, Waz is similarly set. It's meant to look gritty. It mostly happens at night. But, I don't know, they haven't put the filter on the cameras.
Right.
It just looks a bit glossy. But you can tell it doesn't mean to be glossy. It means to be gritty.
It's polished grit.
Exactly. Polished grit. But anyway, not a bad film. Not a bad watch. So that was Waz. I'll mention as well later a couple of other things I've seen. Waltz with Bashir, which is very good. A subtitled film. And also another subtitled film, very good, which is Daywatch.
Yes, which I've yet to see. It's all Nightwatch, but not Daywatch.
Yes, indeed.
Is there a third one? There is a third
there
one.
There is Twilight Watch on the way as well. Okay. But I'm guessing they'll wait till Twilight's out the way so that it's
that's true, because that
confused.
Will confuse people.
Exactly.
Despite one, no doubt, being a lot better than the other.
I'm sure. I have no doubt of that whatsoever. Yes, and you've seen some other things this week, haven't you?
Well, yes, I've seen older films, just a random DVD viewing, or in the form of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is Robert Downey Jr. Again, it's a film that I feel is well known, but then I watched it with a couple of other people, and none of them had seen it. So I was sort of bored, had a section of DVDs around here, in fact, and said, yeah, all right, what do people fancy watching? And none of them had seen this. It's Robert Downey Jr., and it was sort of him around the time of his comeback, I think, when he'd been out of the way for a little while due to drug problems.
Yes.
And then had a resurgence, pretty much led by this, I think, because it's written and directed by Shane Black, who wrote the first Lethal Weapon film, and is actually very good. It's the first film, I think he wrote Lethal Weapon and Long Kiss Goodnight, and maybe something else, and now this. So he's got limited output, but it's all of very good quality.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, it's quite self-referential to a degree. It's narrated by Robert Downey Jr., and he knows as if he knows it's a film. And he's a small-time crook who somehow ends up being given an acting role, goes to LA, and while researching the acting role with the help of a private detective, played by Val Kilmer, stumbles across an actual murder plot, which gets quite convoluted. Because I know it quite well, but I realise watching with three people who didn't know it, they all, not struggle, but it's quite interwoven and it's quite fast-paced and it's not always obvious who's double-crossing who or who's involved with who, especially since one or two people go by different names. So it takes a bit of following, but I think it's got a decent payoff as a result. And it's very funny and also moderately violent, but not ridiculously so. And it's just a very under-the-radar...
More bang-bang than Kiss-Kiss, is it?
No, there's a bit of both.
Bit of both, okay.
And more chuckle-chuckle as well.
Okay.
Which wouldn't have worked as well in the title.
Not a good working title, is it?
No, but it's a surprisingly funny film.
You'd be expecting Barry and Paul to crop up, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. Hey, kids. So, but yeah, it's well worth a watch if you've not seen it. Head down to a rental store and dig it out. And also Sweeney Todd, which is more...
Sweeney Todd, oh, yes.
Which is... Well, no, it's weird. Because I remember seeing it at the cinema and enjoying it. And since then, I've got it into my mind it was a bit flawed. And watching it again, I realised, actually, no, I quite like it.
Yeah.
I mean, because Johnny Depp singing, the first few bars annoyed me.
Yeah.
But then you kind of get into it and you realise... Well, I think you just sort of get used to it, really.
My favourite bit of trivia with that, which I've mentioned many times before, is that there's a link between Johnny Depp singing starting that and Norman Wisdom. Because Johnny Depp said that he modelled his singing style in Sweeney Todd on David Bowie, which I think you can sort of hear.
Yes,
my friend. There's a bit of that going on. David Bowie originally formed his singing style around Anthony Newley in the 50s and 60s, and Anthony Newley based his singing style on Norman Wisdom from the 40s and 50s. Yeah. So that's why you can hear a link between my friends and Mr. Grimsdale. There is a link.
Definite connection.
There's two people in the middle, but it works. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And Helena Bonham Carter is a bit weak in singing. Well, no, not in singing quality, but in terms of volume. She's not...
Yes,
she gets outsung by a 10-year-old child quite easily.
Yeah.
But she still fits the part well.
The trouble with her...
It is extremely gory.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Brilliantly so, comedically so. But if you're someone who doesn't like gore, as one of the people I watched it with is, then you won't necessarily like it. But it's surprisingly funny for a bloodthirsty film.
I always think Bonham Carter's... Although I like Bonham Carter. I like a bit of BC. But but I think she's got to always prove herself a bit more in those films where you know that she got the part because she's married to the director.
Yes.
Although she's good in it, I wanted her to be brilliant.
Yes, that's probably true. At the same time, I love Tim Burton so much, I'm willing to just assume he only puts her in because she was the best for the part as well.
Right.
Which is probably a bit of blinkeredness on my part.
Yes.
But also, I think that's not entirely... I mean, I think if he was casting a film that she just wasn't right for, he wouldn't put her in it, just because he's married to her.
Yes.
I'd like to think.
Fair point, yeah.
But then that's just my Burton obsession coming to the fore. But yeah, so worth a watch.
I agree. Good film.
And now, Changeling?
Let's do Changeling. Because we've both seen Changeling. This is the topical bit, really, of the film. We've got a visitor coming in. This is nice.
Hello! This is Paul's housemate, who was home early from work.
We might get her to come on the podcast in a minute.
No.
Do you want to be on a podcast? Oh, she's all shy.
She's so shy, shouting it from the front door that she's shy.
She's an actress, so she shouldn't be, really.
Very true.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, Changeling.
Changeling.
Yeah, it's a rare topical thing.
Yes.
Or that we've both seen.
Because my cinema viewing
has been rubbish, and yours was massively overdosed last week.
It was a bit. Yeah, I've gone from seeing 8 films in the cinema over one weekend, which was last week's podcast, to this week seeing 1 film in the cinema.
Yes. But a good film.
But what a film. I thought it was very good. I thought it was really, really good, actually. And, it's, you know, Clint Eastwood directing it, writing it, producing it, and doing the music for it.
He didn't write it.
Didn't he?
No. He wrote and produced it and did the music. Didn't he do the screenplay? He might have helped.
Yeah, but I know it's not his story, but I thought he had something to
do. No, because my flatmate was saying on the way down that I think it was the writer of this pretty much wrote a draft and handed it over, and everyone said, that's brilliant, you don't need to do anything else, it's done.
I did read that the script is almost word for word from the real accounts.
Yes.
So not only is it based on a true story, it's pretty much what you see is what you get.
Because they say at the end one or two events have been fictionalised.
Yes.
But whether that means they've just adjusted it to protect people or just made them up for the sake of a bit of drama.
I think
it's only minor touches rather than anything important.
I think actually it's a really important thing about Changeling is that the true story factor makes it for me, really.
Because
if you haven't seen the trailer, it's Angelina Jolie plays a woman. It's back in the 30s, is it, or
20s. 20s. I think it starts for late 20s.
Yeah, 1928 it is. Her kid goes missing, and the police bring her a child saying, this is your boy, and she says, no, it's not, he has a different face. And it's really, the whole film is then the police insisting, look, get out of our hair, we've given you a child, aren't you happy now? And her going, but it's not mine.
Except weirdly, that's what I thought it was going to be. I thought the whole thing was just going to be her fighting. Yeah. But it actually has a nicer arc to it. I think it's divided up nicely, because it starts off with the loss of the child, and then moves on to the reuniting of her and her child, and the police doctoring it. And then then we find out maybe what might have happened to her child. And the police, not trying to cover that up, but getting awkward as a result. And then the truth starts coming out, and you end up with
And it becomes a different film, actually.
Courtroom activity as a result.
It's the fact I didn't expect that middle third, really. That's what made it a good film for me, I think, really. So, I approve. Yeah. Do you like it, Jen?
We're being stared at.
Yeah, I did. I tried to explain that watching that film was a bit like watching Lassie, and it's so angst-ridden and really emotional that the more gruesome moments were almost like a relief because it was so alien, whereas the female treatment it was terrible. I mean, that's one of the good things about this film, is actually quite a feminist film. It shows how women were treated and sort of ignored.
Yes.
At that time.
Happier days.
And, the empowerment and... Yeah, it was a good film. I did really enjoy is a strong word.
You found it quite traumatic because you saw it with me and another guy, and so we were both there laughing at the plight of women.
No, it's not hilarious, is it? Really?
No, we were there. I think we found it easier to watch, just because I don't know, we're less sensitive men. Whereas you found it actually quite a hard watch because it is horrific what she goes through.
Yeah,
and she gets the police really screw her over quite nastily.
Yes.
Before the truth starts coming out.
I did watch a lot of the film through my fingers.
Yeah, and not for horror reasons, just because...
But it's impressive if a film can get across without gore, a sense of horror, really. So I think
the true aspect of it comes to the fore. Because if it was a completely fictional film, I'd just be thinking, well, that's never happened. No one would get away with that.
You wouldn't believe it, would you?
Exactly. And watching, knowing it's a true story, and knowing... I mean, regardless of any changes they might have made, the broad sweep of it is absolutely accurate. And so just knowing that all of this happened and this poor woman was actually subjected to all of this makes it... Yeah, I mean, well, it is a harder watch, or it's far more moving as a result, because you realise what she went through.
I heard that Clint Eastwood wanted to put a true story at the front of it, and I think was eventually persuaded to put based on a true story, because there were... I think it was mainly the stuff where she's... sent to a place.
Yes.
That's the one that's a bit more fictionalised because there's no record of what happened there.
Okay.
But so everything else, there's a record of, and it's pretty much word for word. And the fact that it's a true story makes it
one,
really...
one of, I think it says at the end, one or two characters were combined. Narrative efficiency.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, I mean, they're minor touches in an otherwise entirely factual film.
I thought Angelina Jolie was brilliant as well. She's very good.
I think you said last night, it's a sort of a cliche, but it is true to say it's her film.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that. It's very much her film. When she's on screen, she's captivating and governs the whole thing. But I think, as you said last night, when we move to other characters and see other events that are going on, we're not thinking about her as much. I mean, it's her film, but when she's not on screen, the other characters get just as much weight and carry just as much story with them.
I like the fact that suddenly I was switching to... I mean, there's a kid in it who's, without again giving too much away, wondering what he should do, whether he should own up to something or not. And for that sort of 10 minutes of that film, I felt like it was his film, which made it great, really. The fact that you can switch to that, and the characters all came to life, really, with that.
Yeah, because she doesn't dominate over anyone else. She just I mean, not literally, but she essentially steps aside when she has to, and then the rest of the story bubbles up, and then it all comes back and recombines.
But it's good to see her in something, because I said yesterday that I find with her that I'm just... Her on a film often puts me off seeing it, just for the fact I'm bored of her in the public eye and the Heat magazine thing. But
then that's more... But it reminded me that she's a good actor. Celebrity culture, rather than... It's not her fault.
No, I just need a reminder occasionally that she's a good actress, which this one really was. So, and the
lip... Because she has been in, I mean, a fair few films, but I'd struggle, beyond Tomb Raider and Girl Interrupted... Actually, I'd struggle to reel off a huge list of films that she's been
Life
in.
And Something Like It, apparently, things like that. It just doesn't really. Yes. Yeah, was it a news reporter or something?
Yeah, I think she had a very big blonde
wig.
She
picked some turkeys, really.
Yeah,
so.
And she was in something with Antonio Banderas, which is very sex based.
Yes.
Which I've never even seen, but I know exists.
Now you mention it that way, I don't know why I've never seen that. But the lip gloss bill for this film must have been huge.
It was immense.
Because she's got big lips.
Yes.
And they were
she's famous for
the reddest
lips.
In the world that I've ever seen in this film. So it must have been phenomenal.
It's probably accurate for the time.
I must admit, I wish I woke up in the morning looking as gorgeous as she did.
Yeah, the first shot
my
of...
My hair, perfect.
The first shot of she wakes up and takes her child to school. And she does wake up with perfect hair and makeup. and pretty much just puts a dress on and goes straight out the door.
And it's amazing how they give her, makeup and, when she's I almost gave something away, so I'll shut up.
Yes,
but
when she's somewhere, you wouldn't expect her to have makeup.
I did think that as well. Yeah.
Well, yes, but it's film. You've got to allow.
But there's sort of a look across the corridor. And all look at the woman. She's been here 40 years. We'll end up looking like her. And Angelina Jolie thinking, no, I won't. I always look like this.
I'd have a team of makeup artists to look after me.
Exactly.
When I'm
her, right? Come on, wait for the credits to roll. I've got an assistant. but and I thought that. Yeah, Clint Eastwood, I think, does this thing. I think this film and Million Dollar Baby, I thought, both had something in common, which is there's this boxing term called the forgotten arm, I think they call it.
Right.
Which is when you hit someone constantly with one arm and they forget about the other, and then you sock it to them, to sucker punch with the other one. And Million Dollar Baby certainly had that for me, where you think it's about one thing and then suddenly, whoa, didn't see that coming, it's about something else.
Yeah.
Equally, this film, I thought, something... Maybe it's Clint Eastwood back to his action days. Maybe he's got this forgotten arm thing from there.
Yeah, sure. Although that may
he just hammers one thing home and then suddenly, ba-joom, air in, you get something
but
else.
But it's not a twist for anyone who doesn't like twists or think they're going to be misled down a completely different path. It's a natural evolution of the story.
Mm.
But it's just not really in the trailers, which is a good thing. It's a trailer that says, a woman loses her child, fighting against the police, and that's it. That's all you need to know to then see the film and see how it plays out. Because it all ties into that. Unlike other trailers, which spell out the whole plot, and then you're not particularly interested as the film unfolds because you know where it's going.
Yes.
I was surprised because I tend to not shy away from heavier weight films, but if given the choice between Lethal Weapon or Changeling, I probably would always grab Lethal Weapon because it's an easier option. Which is ridiculous. No, okay, maybe not Lethal Weapon. Off the top of my head.
Given the choice between The Transporter 3 and Schindler's List, you'd pick Transporter 3 day of the week.
I'm
going to
see Transporter 3 on Sunday.
Exactly. And I'll give you Schindler's List for your birthday 2 years ago. Have you seen it yet?
Possibly. No, not yet.
No, exactly.
But this is my point. And I'm not saying that one is a better film, obviously. But if I'm sort of sitting there of an evening thinking, I fancy watching something, you're never really likely to go, I've got 2 hours to kill. What do I fancy watching? I know, Schindler's List.
Every time.
No, you have to really be in the mood and think, I want to watch a fantastic,
it's
powerful
a popcorn
film.
Flick, come on.
Really?
Maybe not.
But that's why I'm pleased that I basically knew people who wanted to go and see Changeling. And so I thought, yes, fine, I'll go and see Changeling. Mm. I didn't need to be dragged, I wanted to, but I would rarely... throw myself straight at them. I'd like to be... If I'm led towards them, I then enjoy them.
Has this inspired you to go out in future and see more hearty, flicks?
I do go and see hearty, weighty films. Yeah. But it's more... I need not even encouragement. I need the tiniest of prods in order to go and see them.
I'm guessing then, to move it on, that you haven't seen Waltz with Bashir.
No, but again, that's a film that has been recommended to me. And therefore, I would go and see it if I get the opportunity to.
I was recommended it by, just film reviews generally, I think.
Yeah, fair enough.
I saw it last week, and it's a good film, but it's quite heavy going.
Well, yes, I know.
I think that's probably...
I think a friend of ours went to see a preview or premiere or something of it.
Oh, okay.
Sally went to see it, with a talk by the director afterwards, and was saying it's a hard watch, apparently. It's quite... Mm.
It's certainly the best animated... documentary in Israeli that I've ever seen.
Right. And that's up against some pretty stiff competition.
I mean, for a start, just the idea of doing an animated documentary is is weird, really, because if you've got the documentary footage, you put it on the screen.
Yeah.
The difference is, in this case, it's actually... The story is a guy who fought in the Israeli-Lebanese conflict of the early 80s, which is not something that I know much about, if I even knew there was one. But the thing is, he's sort of present day now, this guy who fought on the Israeli side, and he's sort of forgotten various bits of it, and he's sort of, you know, I think his mind has sort of shut it out.
Yeah.
But he felt he needed to reconnect with it a bit, so he's actually been around to people who he fought with and then said, look, I'm having these dreams about this particular event on this beach. Were you there? Can you tell me what happened then, and can you sort of piece it together? So because it sort of fits this idea of this guy who can't quite picture what happened in the events, that's why the animation comes in, really. But the weird thing is they actually animate the discussions he has between, you know, the interviews he has between his old friends from the forces, and then it'll go into this animation of the event that they're then describing.
Right.
So
the footage they actually film and then animate, is that animated based on the footage, or is it like a Scanner Darkly where it's sort of traced over and it looks quite realistic?
Yeah, it's like a Scanner Darkly, really. It looks sort of realistic, but it looks traced over.
Yeah.
But I think they've clearly, you know, enhanced it because of the animation element. That means they can... I don't know how they would have done this, in fact, where they've actually acted it all out and then animated and then put the actual backgrounds onto it. But they put you right in the heart of warfare.
Right.
But in not like in a Saving Private Ryan thing where they're fictionalising it, but this is a real event, a real telling of it. And this is someone reporting what happened.
Right.
But because you can't... There wasn't footage at the time of it. They've actually animated it. And so, in that sense, it feels like it's very much real, more real, even though it's animated.
Yes.
So it was
sort of a representation of reality.
Exactly.
And you kind of fill in yourself
exactly.
as well.
It really was that. It really was that. But, so, I mean, 10 out of 10 for originality. Also 10 out of 10 for heavy goingness. So it's a tough watch, but again, you know, a worthwhile one if you get a chance to.
Yeah.
But again, it's the subtitled effect does put people off, unfortunately. When I saw it, there was two others, I think, in the cinema. Although I generally do go and see films at 11 in the morning on a Tuesday, so that's probably why.
Yes, I've never understood that with why people... Because it happened, I think it was widely reported with City of God, I think, because that got phenomenal reviews. So people went to see it. But then there were... I've read several reports, anyway, of people... walking out as soon as the film starts. Oh, subtitles.
They do, don't they?
Can't read. I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand it. I mean, how... Maybe, okay, if you can't read, then fair enough, but that's a minority of the population. If English isn't your first language, then fair enough as well, because it's a bit of a struggle to try and decipher. You know, I'd never go and see a subtitle film in French, for example, because I could probably work out the gist, but it wouldn't be fun.
Yeah.
But the majority of people going to see a subtitle film in English cinema are going to be English speakers and readers.
Yes.
They can surely look at two things at once, and I just don't understand it.
Although I'm equally amazed by the amount of trailers you get for foreign language films, where if you look at it, you think, oh, that looks like quite a good film, and then suddenly at the end of it, you think, I've never actually heard anyone speak throughout that entire trailer. And then you look at, you know, the very, very quick flash of a credit they put when they say, coming soon, director this person, actor that person.
Yes.
And if you pay attention, you sort of see, they're all foreign-sounding names, and no one actually said anything in this trailer. It was lots of, you know, maybe words on the screen, sort of saying, beware this summer, whatever. And actually then you go and see it, and then you discover it's a subtitle film. So they do lure you in, clearly. But they do that, clearly, because they know people will be put off by
it. Well, yes, but if I didn't know something, I'd think to sit down and think, oh, it's got subtitles. Fair enough. I mean, I can't see what, if I've seen a trailer that appeals to me and I've paid my money and I go in and I sit down, I can't suddenly think what aspect of having to read words would suddenly be, oh, I now don't want to see this film.
Maybe they're all going to get their reading glasses.
That could be the case.
They're all left in the car and they just forget to come in again.
Well, people are forgetful. It does happen.
The other subtitle film I saw this week was Daywatch, second part of the trilogy. The highest earning film for Russia, for post-Soviet Russia. And fine movie. Got to recommend
really?
It. Really good.
Because I remember, I've seen Night Watch, I think sort of 1.5 times it was on TV, and I caught a bit of it, and did like it, but I remember it didn't quite gel with me. I think I enjoyed it, because I like the vampire thing, but, I think I wanted slightly more. Daywatch may start building up the...
Daywatch, it's more of the same, really.
Right.
If you like Night Watch, you like Daywatch. And I did like Night Watch, though I went into Daywatch a bit sceptically, sort of thinking... I remember Night Watch being quite difficult to get my head around some of the bits. It's quite, you know, they're setting up. It's a modern day fantasy, really, about sort of vampires, the keepers of what is it? There's the Day Watch and the Night Watch, who are people of the light and the dark, and
the
light.
The Night Watch are the good guys.
Yes.
Yes. And the Daywatch are the bad guys.
The bad guys. And there's these two equally balanced sides, and it's sort of a battle for the one, this child's born who's going to join one of the sides, and that's going to tip the balance.
Yes.
So it's both sides sort of going after this kid. So, you know, they're setting up a sort of modern-day Lord of the Rings, really.
Mm.
But like anything like Lord of the Rings, it takes a while to get into it, because... they're setting up a whole new world, really.
Yeah.
They're setting up, this is how it happens, and this is the order of things, and there's this alternate dimension they can get to by doing this. And when you're doing all that, plus reading at the bottom of the screen everything that's going on as well, it does take a little bit to get your head around. But for me, just the visual effects make up for it all. And particularly in Daywatch, because, again, it's been a couple of years since Nightwatch, and, you know, there's everything from, there's someone who drives a car across the side of a building, which just looks, but, you know, doesn't look like there's any CGI involved. I'm guessing there was.
Probably.
And,
well, you never know. The majors have done it all practically.
They may have done it all,
slung it up on wires, and yeah.
But there's everything from that. There's a smaller truck going into a bigger truck, smaller truck just going straight through the middle of the bigger truck and out the other side again.
Nice.
Just it's sort of impressive stunts like that, really. And from what I gather, most of it sort of either done for real or done with as little CGI as possible. So all credit to them. I think they've really sort of put themselves on the world map of a sort of modern day action / fantasy cinema, really.
Cool.
So, good film.
Which is also telling, because you're not a big, or you, I mean, you know, you don't have a problem with effects, but you don't like effects for the sake of effects.
Yeah.
So the fact that it clearly works towards the story,
exactly,
makes it worth.
And you know, I like it. If it's original and different and doesn't just seem too much like just a headache, then all credit to it. And yeah, it didn't seem to take anything for granted, and it wasn't sort of doing action for action's sake. It was interesting story, and can't wait for part three.
Cool, which is also quite, it's a good sign, I suppose. Yeah, because I remember the effects in Nightwatch being good, and certainly some good effects, but not too heavy. I mean, not, there wasn't too much going on. It was mostly acting and drama.
Yeah.
So it's clearly a sign that if you make a film, one of a trilogy, that does really well, you then get the budget to expand the world and build it and do what you want.
Exactly.
Which
so
is not a bad thing.
So watch this space for Twilight to watch, which will be out in a year or two's time. Yeah.
Just be a bit gloomy.
A little bit gloomy. So you might not be able to read the subtitles.
Yes. Actually, on a vaguely related note, in film news, thinking about future trilogies, there are plans afoot to make a film based on Isaac Asimov's Foundation.
Okay.
Which I read a while ago and hadn't really heard about, but essentially was on the lookout for a book and came across this and thought, I've not read much Isaac Asimov, I'll give it a go. And it's bizarre. I think the intention is to make it a trilogy or a series of films. The basic plot of Foundation is that it's a guy who, I can't remember what the practice is he has. It's something like psychohistory, but not quite. It's essentially telling, if you work on a sample of people, you can say, okay, I've got, like, you know, look at these 20 people and I can deduce that they're going to do this. And then just making those samples bigger and bigger and bigger until you're looking at the whole of humanity, and then he figures out, hang on, looking at, or it's actually the galaxy, I think it's Earth is long gone, so this is a future galaxy people are living in, and he looks at this entire empire and thinks, I can see exactly what path it's going down and what's going to happen, and 2,000 years from now there's going to be mass disaster and we're going to have 30,000 years of awfulness. But if we take these steps at certain stages, we can prevent this happening. Or can at least make it better or avoid certain things. So it's a slightly odd book because it sets up... You get the first few chapters, you get on board with certain characters and this guy starting out and spelling out what's going to happen. And then suddenly you go, now we're jumping 200 years in the future and everyone you've just got to know is dead and we're starting off with new people learning his lessons.
Okay.
And so the first book is relatively short and then it expands into bigger and bigger and bigger epics. But they're making a film based on this, which could be interesting. I don't know if it may go the way of the route that I think Golden Compass has gone,
which is
they'll make a film and it won't do very well and it'll disappear. But hopefully, if done right, it could get people's interest and be a sci-fi classic. Because like Isaac Asimov has churned out huge numbers of books and not many have been made into films. Good films, anyway.
Sorry,
just occurred to me with
these. Yes, it's a tricky one to get right, that, because I'm reading at the minute Stephen King's 7-part. In the foreword to part one, he actually says, I just wanted to set out to write a Lord of the Rings. And it's 7 parts. It's a massive, epic tale, The Dark Tower. And from what I gather there, I think Frank Darabont is... Well, I think for a while he's been talking about turning this into a film, or several films, which again would just be, and if they did all 7, it would be, I think they couldn't do all 7, I think they'd have to lump it together and books 1, 2, 3 together or something.
Yeah. I was just trying to think of a series of books that have actually been turned into films in their entirety, and apart from Harry Potter.
Bond films?
Well, no, they ran out of plots after a while.
Well, true, but they've done all the books, pretty much, haven't they?
Yes, or elements of all the books, at least. Yeah. That's it. I don't actually know the Bond books too well, so I don't know whether they've just compiled
a few short stories. I think they're still sort of.
Yeah, well, that's where Quantum of Solace came from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Quantum of Solace. Can we go a week without mentioning it?
Let's not go back there.
Let's not go there.
But again, the Bond series is not an ongoing arc. Hmm. These sort of separate things. It's just clearly quite a rarity to get people. But then I was thinking in terms of our titling, we've gone up to four.
Yeah.
When we get past six or seven, we're frankly going to be running out of options.
No, I think we're good. I reckon we'll be good to about 20.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what film sequels, aside from the Bond films, but we're not covering Bond, we may move on to Bond films, but they're not numbered. If we're trying to think of episode numbers that match up to film sequels...
I've got a few up my sleeve.
You've clearly got a plan.
I've got a few up my sleeve. I should not be revealing, and you have to tune in future weeks.
No, okay. I'm stuck when it comes to thinking of any film that went up to number 12 with a subtitle.
Oh, yes. I've got a few collections here.
No, okay.
Mostly porn films, but...
that opens a whole
kettle. I should say at this point, I do not have any porn films.
I bet you do.
Only in the cellar.
You don't have a cellar. Or do you? I've never been into that cupboard.
I call it the dungeon. Anyway, on a lighter note, what else should we do? We've got Desert Island Flicks we should do as well. Yes, indeed.
Which is this week your turn to sabotage me.
Oh, is that right? Is it my turn?
This is how it works. Yeah, we decided this.
Last week we had Action. We both agreed on Die Hard, which we should probably try and pick something different each week if possible.
It was the first one.
Okay, so this week, Desert Island Flicks. So if you could take one film to a desert island that was of the musical nature.
Interesting.
One musical film you can take to a desert island. What would it be?
It would be The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Ah, good. Ah, yes.
And not just because it's Christmas. That's merely a coincidence.
Good choice.
Ties in. I enjoy occasional musicals, I suppose. Mm. I've got a couple, but none that I really put on and watch regularly. Yeah. But Nightmare Before Christmas, for me, it's a soundtrack that I listen to regularly anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's not directed by Tim Burton, but it is his...
His baby?
Yes, his mindset. And, of course, it's scored by and sung by Danny Elfman.
Indeed.
Who I love with a passion. Not physically, but...
He does. He really does. You should see his dungeon. It's all Danny Elfman.
All Danny Elfman. Coated with pictures of Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
But every score Danny Elfman has done that I find, I get. Because not all of them are available, which is irritating. But, yes, I'm a big fan of Danny Elfman. So him singing and writing stuff just absorbs me. And What's This?
It's a good tune.
One of my favourite musical songs. Random semi-pub quiz question. Who directed The Nightmare Before Christmas?
I thought it was Tim Burton until you said about
really?
2 minutes ago.
Oh, sorry. No.
Was it Steve Guttenberg?
No, it was a man called Henry Selick.
Oh, okay.
Which Tom's I only
dad?
Know... No.
Oh.
Unfortunately, well, not that I know. No, it's spelled differently. Oh. Sort of S-E-L-I-C-K, I think.
Oh, okay.
I'm not entirely... certain, but I think that Henry Selick is a stop-motion animation director.
Oh, okay.
So he knew what was going on. So Tim Burton had essentially the ideas, and then he and Henry Selick worked together to...
Right.
And Henry Selick...
In the same way,
going.
You've got Nick Park and... who's the other one who does the Wallace and Gromit?
Oh,
Tony,
yes.
Tony Hart? Not Tony Hart.
Not Tony Hart.
That would be great.
No, that's...
Morph appears with Wallace and Gromit. Wallace and Gromit, Morph and Chaz. There you go. Yeah. Wonderful. One day.
You get some collaborators. I think it was that sort of arrangement. Yes. Although Henry Selick does have his own film coming out quite soon called Coraline, which looks like a complete trippy, weird film.
Oh dear, really?
Well, in a good way. It's stop motion about a girl who, I think she's not got a particularly happy home life, and then finds a door or creates a door that goes into an alternate version of her home. Where her parents are all happy and cheerful, but weirdly they've got buttons for eyes.
Nice.
And then want her to join this family by removing her eyes and sewing on buttons. And it all goes a bit trippy.
Hey, kids.
But seek out the trailer, because it's weird looking, but fascinating at the same time.
What's it called?
Coraline.
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 Coraline. Coraline.
C-O-R-A-L-I-N-E.
Coraline.
Yeah. Anyway, so Night Before Christmas.
Good work.
Musicals.
Good work.
Yourself?
Myself. One musical to take to Desert Island with a DVD player, of course.
Right.
Probably a TV and a power generator of some sort. I don't know. I suddenly launched the question myself. I hadn't thought about it at all. So I like the old sort of musicals. I do like, I've got Sound of Music here. I've only seen it once, actually. But Mary Poppins, I love. I would probably say Mary Poppins, except for the fact that earlier this year I saw a lovely film called Once. Which I've only seen once,
yes.
But so I need to see it a few more times before I know if I could watch it again and again and again. and if it's reached classic status for me. But I think I would. Yeah, I'm probably going to say once actually.
Okay, what's bad about?
It's about a singer songwriter, a guitarist guy, and it's set in Ireland. He meets an Eastern European girl who's a singer, and she's a pianist as well. And it's a musical, but it's set very much in the real world. It's these two who meet. They sort of fall for each other, but it's kind of like a slice of life, just a week or two out of their lives. But they play all the songs they do in the film. It's just them busking and them jamming together.
Right. Okay.
And also, it's just really sweet songs. Yeah. And the songs are written by the guys in the who play the parts in the film. They're sung by the guys who in the film.
Yeah.
The characters are based on the actors as well. Both actors have said they're never going to act again.
Right.
Because they're singers, it's what they want to do. Oh, they love doing the film, but they want to focus on the music.
Yeah.
The film is about these two characters who want to go and focus on the music. So it's just so sweet.
Yeah.
And it really... It's such a one of its kind thing because I don't think you know it's the sort of thing you could not see America remaking particularly.
Yeah, because it wouldn't have the spirit.
The point of it is that it's these two guys who just made this film really quickly with some lovely songs and a really, really sweet plot.
Yeah.
And it's an hour and a half, if that, it's about 80 minutes probably. And I'd really recommend it once, My Desert Island Flick.
Definitely. Fair enough. Seek it out.
Definitely. Good. We should probably wrap up then, really, shouldn't we?
Probably.
Also, going to get to the post box in about 10 minutes.
Fair enough.
So every week is something glamorous. Last week it was Leeds. This week, got to get the post.
You didn't have to mention the post box. You could have mentioned you're picking up a stand-up comic for your gig this evening.
Well, there is that as well, but I need to go to the post box before that.
Yeah, I know, but you don't have to say that.
Well, you know,
you're shattering your celebrity illusion.
It adds a real world.
Well, that's true.
To it, you know, but
you think your housemate coming home in the middle of this didn't?
I think that did it as
well.
We're
lucky no phones have gone off.
Exactly. We are rather ready.
We'll kick the microphone over in a bit. Yeah. The laptop.
Exactly,
it'll all
be
fine.
Clang. Yeah. Good. So I don't know what else we need to wrap up with. Anything else to say particularly?
There's the world clock thing, if you want to do that.
Oh, world clock. Yeah, should we do the world clock thing?
Yeah, well, you sort it out.
Okay, fair enough. You introduce the world clock.
The world clock. I came across this link earlier in the week, which I think has been online for a while, but I only found it recently, which is it's a world clock based on statistics from various websites, I mean, official sources and websites online, that have results of birth rates and death rates and illness rates and all sorts of other random statistics. And we'll try and post the link online somewhere in case that appeals to you. But it totals up the total deaths this year or also month, day, or you can just set it to whenever and then it'll count upwards from there. So we set it at the start. And since then, there have been how many births? I'm a bit too far away.
You can judge this podcast in terms of it's about 42 and a half minutes thus far. Or you can say it's 10,900 births.
Oh, really?
That's how many it happened. Hey! Many congratulations.
Well, congratulations to the 10,000 plus new parents.
Although my commiserations to the 4,600... 4,674 deaths that have happened since we started.
Right.
I don't think we're responsible for any of them.
Hopefully not.
And also for the two species that have become extinct.
Really?
Since we started. That's quite depressing, really, isn't it?
That's a little bit depressing.
That's rather bleak. Let's find a nice positive one to end on before we can always do this again another week.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Well, except if we do the same time each week, it'll probably be about the same each week.
We can compare and contrast.
Well, that's true. See if each will pick a different thing. Comes a handy measure of time as well.
There have been 76 divorces.
I thought you said more positive. He's going on to...
Not prison growth. Is that 9 new prisons or new prisoners? I don't know.
Probably new prisoners.
7,000 computers have been...
7,000 computers? Oh, okay, that's not bad.
What's a nice one? Population growth? No, that's not really.
No, not great.
Illegal immigration?
Weirdly, so you're saying we haven't been responsible for the species extinct. I'm just thinking because 70-ish divorces... See, my sister is a family lawyer. And so doesn't just do divorce cases, but she might actually have been responsible for one of them.
I think the only positive one is the births, actually. All the rest are quite bleak.
Well, let's focus on the births.
Now it's been 11,235 births.
Fair enough, but how many deaths? I think we should look. Well, hang on, what's population growth?
Population growth of 6,260. Okay,
split the difference. Go 6,000 plus. 6,000 new people
so
in
well
the world.
So well done. There you go. Well done, world. All good, apart from...
For churning out more people who need feeding.
Which, is too extinct. So, oh, and... 1,000 hectares of forest have been lost since we started talking.
So that's new. So of the 6,000 new people, there are now two fewer animals for them to eat and 1,000 hectares of forest
I
less for them to run
around
in.
We've been wasting our time bantering about films. We should go and plant some forests, clearly.
Well, that's very true. And possibly try and create a species.
You live and learn.
That might be a little bit tricky.
But first, I'm going to go to the post box.
Exactly. You've got to have goals.
You can live the dream, So, that's probably all for this week then on Movie Banter. For
banter
on
patrol.
That's what this week has been. Join us next week.
So you laughed when I first mentioned it, and now you're looking at me disparagingly every time you
tune
out.
Very much so. So join us next week on Movie Banter 5.
Something else. We'll think about it. We'll think about it. Rather than just stammering.
Yeah.
I can't even
it's
say
it. It's time
them
to stop, isn't it?
It is, really.
It is time to stop.
Yes. We'll work it out in advance.
Till then, so long. Thanks for tuning in or logging on or whatever. Do recommend us to your friends. Look us on iTunes.
Please do. If you listen and enjoy, please spread it around a bit. Because we're building up subscribers slowly but surely. Yeah. But if you spread it out there, then that'll do it even faster.
That'll help. So very good. Be well, and till the next time, ta-ta.
Farewell.